a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate State Affairs will come to order. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Adelstein?
Aye, here.
Cutler? Frary?
Here.
Grave?
Here.
Johnston?
Here.
Rave? Teason?
Here.
Olson?
Here.
Roden?
Here. Quorum is present. You have received the minutes. Comments, corrections, action? Senator Frerich. Moved to approve by Frerich. Second by Teason. Comments on the motion? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Just a couple announcements before we get started. Again, if you wish to testify today, we'd ask you to sign the podium by the front door. Also, you might check your cell phones, make sure they're in an appropriate setting. Also have, looks like several groups of students. Somebody want to introduce your group and tell us where you're from?
We're a third period first class government.
Where are you from?
Here.
Welcome to the Capitol. Who else?
Warner?
Well, why don't all the Warner kids stand up so we can see where you... Okay. Welcome. Yeah, same with a peer group. Okay. Anybody else? Selby, why don't you guys stand up? All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. If there are no other announcements before we get started, we are going to drop below the line and start with House Bill 1046. House Bill 1046, stand by. Okay, we will reopen discussion on House Bill 1046, and I will recognize Mr. Seward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now I have a brighter green light. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Seward from the Governor's Office, and I'm here today on behalf of the Department of Military. Last week, I believe it was, you heard testimony on House Bill 1046 and deferred action. Since that time, there has been what I would call three or four or maybe five party negotiation. And I believe we've reached a negotiated settlement and really, I believe, it improved the bill. And so the Department of Military thanks everyone, including Senator Cutler, for reviewing this and for offering recommended changes that did improve the bill. The page has handed out Amendment 1046-OD, Oscar Delta, and I would ask for your favorable consideration of that amendment, which I believe will resolve any other opponents that may have existed before.
Thank you. And if you would stand pat there for a second, and I would ask for somebody to move 1046-OD, motion by Johnson, second by Rave. We will continue with discussion questions from the committee regarding the proposed amendment. Discussion or questions? Senator Cutler.
Mr. Chair, I think it might be helpful if we just generally discussed two of the issues that were the bigger issues, just trying to get the appropriate language and how this fixes that so the committee has a good feel for what the amendment does, if you don't mind.
No, that's very good. Proceed.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Cutler, for that question. I was hoping to be able to walk through this. I think it'll be more clear. If you look on page 2 of the engrossed bill, on line 4, after the phrase, nor the deployment, we've inserted or are inserting the word itself, so it will state, nor the deployment itself, hoping to make it more clear that the legislature's intention here is to just refer to the deployment itself. So it'll say neither the execution of such a power of attorney pursuant to this section nor the deployment itself may be considered a factor in considering a substantial and material change of circumstances, nor a factor in the best interest of the child determination for purposes of permanent child custody modification proceedings. That amendment was really the brainchild of the Bar Association, trying to focus on the Department of Military's goal to not have the deployment itself a factor in determining custody. Collateral issues, if there's post-traumatic stress syndrome or perhaps the child no longer can sleep at night or something like that, those other factors could still be considered, but this wouldn't hold the fact that a soldier may have to leave in 3 years for a year, won't hold that against that custodial parent. And then if I could, I would move on to the second phrase that's been added on page 2, line 13. You can see that the original drafter struck, however, the best interest of the child shall be determinative. That was struck, I believe, because it was thought to be overbroad, referring to the entire section. After some discussion, we felt it best to insert the best interest of the child remains determinative for such temporary custody determinations. And so we'd ask that that be inserted just so it's quite clear to the court that while the soldier is deployed and the non-custodial parent is at home, they'll typically receive temporary custody. But if the court wanted to look beyond that non-custodial parent who's at home, having the best interest language in there would free the court up to place the child somewhere else if the non-custodial parent is not fit. And then the final one that I would just highlight, and certainly highlight all of them if you'd like, but on the fifth one down, it says on page 2 after line 19, insert the temporary custody provisions of section 25-4A-11 do not apply to the temporary custody provisions of this section. What we did is delete section 2 of the engrossed bill, which was really just trying to amend SDCL 25-4A-11, and it was quite awkward the way that we were trying to do that. And so with Senator Cutler's help, we came up with this language to say that that section, which really doesn't generally apply to this section, if someone thinks that that section applies in the temporary custody world, it does not apply to this section in the temporary custody world. And there might be a way that I could articulate that better, but I would need more coffee, Mr. Chairman.
You've had plenty of coffee.
That would be all I'd have with regard to the amendments. Stand by for questions.
Thank you. I think I would provide the opportunity for a public comment on the amendment as presented.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tom Barnett, representing the State Bar. We worked hard with Mr. Seward and Senator Cutler, and we very much appreciate the decision of the chair to defer and give us a chance to come with a better bill. This is very much improved. We're very supportive, and we encourage you to pass the bill as amended. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further proponent.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators of the Committee. My name is Roy Slash with the American Legion of South Dakota, and I just want you to know that we're all on board with this bill, this amendment, the way it is. So appreciate it. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Any other proponent comments? Are there any opponents to the proposed amendment? Any opponents? Seeing none, we'll go now to questions from the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
If you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, since we have so many students in the room and we're talking about a bill that I think would affect, you know, the kind of lives they lived, you, if you would sort of out, or maybe I could just simply say what we're discussing.
By all means, Senator Adelstein.
Thank you. For all of you in the room that you all have family experiences, this is a typical thing that the legislature does. It makes rules that affect the laws that affect everyone. So we've been discussing what happens in the event of a National Guardsman or a soldier deployed overseas who has custody of a child for one reason or other, a divorce or some other. So that's what we're discussing. And so the in what you heard about is a bill was brought, a law discussing making the rules, and there were some questions about what was the fairest thing as far as people like you are concerned. And so the bill was held over until today, and there have been some changes made in it. And so the details you're hearing are really something that's agreed upon by the, if we pass the bill, by the legislature in your interest. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Any questions? Seeing none, we will open to discussion and or action. And the first action I would like to see is a vote on the amendment. Any comments on the amendment? Seeing none, the motion is to amend 1046 OD. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. 1046 is so amended. Further comments and or action? Senator Cutler.
I move 1046 do pass as amended.
Second. Motion by Cutler, second by Rave. Comments on that motion, Senator Cutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I do want to again thank Mr. Seward, Mr. Barnett, and the other folks who weighed in. I know Mr. Seward was just wonderful to work with in terms of getting us, keeping us all focused on the bill drafts throughout the weekend. And I think what we have done is good work to preserve, as we always must do, that the best interest of the child remains the standard to be used when it comes to a court's action in determining custody issues for a child. I think this serves to remedy the situation that we find our deployed servicemen and women in, and I thank you for your support and your patience as we work through that process.
Further comments? Any other comments? Well, just in closing, comments from the chair, and since there are a number of young people here, I believe this was a very good example of a good process at work. This bill was a House bill. It's already was over halfway through the process. It had passed the committee in the House and the floor. When it came to this committee, there were concerns that were identified that perhaps the scales had tipped too much in favor of the objective of making sure that a serviceman, his deployment didn't count against him in these custody battles, but we might have lost focus on the primary concern, and that's the good of the child and the welfare of the child. So the parties that had those concerns identified were tagged out and given the opportunity of a couple days to work out a reasonable compromise or a reasonable solution, and we are seeing the results of that solution, and I think the net results is we have a better bill in the process. So with that, the motion then is do pass as amended, House Bill 1046. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Adelstein.
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Frerichs?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Motion carries. House Bill 1046. 46 goes to the floor do pass as amended. We will take up House Bill 1058, Act to Revise Certain Record Search Fees Charged by the Clerk of Courts. That bill has had a prior hearing, and we stopped at the point of questions. So at this point, the chair will open the committee for questions on House Bill 1058. Senator Cutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For anyone from the UJS who'd like to answer this morning.
Mr. Chair, Patricia Dugan with the State Court Administrator's Office.
Thank you. And just to remind us again why you're seeking a fee increase instead of a general fund appropriation.
Mr. Chairman, as the UJS was trying to achieve a 10% budget cut for the current fiscal year in last legislative session, we moved part of our general fund expenses to this fund for payment so that we could achieve that cut. At that time, we proposed to appropriations that that cut was not going to be sustainable in the long term. We had initially proposed a 3.5% cut to our budget out of general funds. Then we went to a 5% cut, but we did not see there was any way to sustain without closing offices or laying off people, as the Chief Justice mentioned the other day, that we could sustain this level of cuts. And so we proposed that we would move these expenses to this fund for 1 year, but that the fund also could not sustain them because of the computer system that we're putting into place and the other ongoing expenses of that fund, and given the revenue sources that are going into that fund. And so we talked last year that we would potentially need a fee increase, that we would see how our funds rebounded over the next couple of months as the economy looked like it might be coming back. The fund will, in our projection, not have enough money in the long term to continue to pay for the expenses that are going to be required to be paid out of this fund. When we talked to appropriations about this year as we were preparing our budget request, we were told they wanted to hold the cuts from last year. They were not looking at doing general fund increases, and so we were going to be forced to go into the court automation fund for any increases to our general budget.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Ms. Dugan. So you've had some discussions with the appropriators about the general funds. Did they indicate to you that there would be any availability of general funds to you in recent discussions that you may have had with them?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cutler, we have talked to some of the appropriators. We've talked about what options there might be for us. And at this time, we have not been told that there are any general funds available, either for a one-time payment or for ongoing expenses that will need to be paid for from this fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dugan, I think it was you that testified on Monday that there are approximately 125,000 requests or records that are distributed on an annual basis. Do I remember that right?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Over the last 5 years, that's what the average has
been. About 125.
Correct.
Could you give me some perspective of those 125? How many of them are, state government requests, the Attorney General's requests? And if I remember right, you had broken it out on your different user groups as far as who actually makes those requests. Could you just give us some perspective in scale of the 125, how many are broken out in different ways?
Mr. Chairman, yes and no. 125,000 are the number of searches that are paid for every year. We don't track the searches that we do not get paid for. If I may continue, agencies like the Attorney General, the Department of Corrections and Social Services have direct feeds into our system, or they receive a push of bulk data. And so they go in directly to our system to get the information that they need. The 125,000 are the ones that we physically process and send out results on.
One quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and thank you for that explanation. Do you charge the Attorney General's office or any of those users that have a direct feed for access to that system?
Mr. Chairman, no, we do not. There is legislation that prohibits us from charging any government entity or its political subdivisions, cities, counties, state.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you please, when you said that over the long run, that the fund would be exhausted or exceeded, how long is the long run?
Mr. Chairman, we have done projections out to about the fiscal year 2018 at this point. The numbers change from day to day depending on the revenues that are coming in, but by our projections, the computer system that we're trying to pay for being one of the primary expenses out of this fund, that will not be completed until 2014 or 2015, depending on whether or not we have to delay implementation. Beyond that, there are continuing expenses out of this fund. Our projections show that once this fund starts going negative in 2014, it will continue to go negative.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up, it will go negative during 2014, or it'll be before that time, and as you just now said, continue to get worse after 2014?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Adelstein, our projection is that depending on whether or not we get this fee increase, we may have to delay some of the implementation of the computer project. If we have to delay that, that will mean we will push expenses into another fiscal year, and we will incur additional expenses for the delay. For instance, we will have to keep programmers on contract to maintain our current system, which will be running in parallel until we get everyone onto the new system. But our projection is that by the end of fiscal year 2014, our fund will be in the negative. We will start fiscal year 15 with a negative cash balance. Our expenses will exceed revenues. We will end the year with a negative cash balance, and that pattern will continue.
One more question in the same vein, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Sir, I'll see.
All right. I'm trying to see the calendar. If you don't stop or halt your present progress, you'll be able to continue until the fiscal year 2014 without getting into a deficit. Is that correct? Do I understand you're just saying?
Mr. Chairman, no. We will still go negative in 2014, just not to the extent that we would go negative if we had to delay the project. So we will go negative in 2014 regardless of whether or not we delay the project. The question is, how far do we go in the hole? Because we will have additional expenses to delay the project.
Mr. If I can, it's one more, and I'll change it a different way.
Sorry,
if you continue your process at the start of the fiscal year 2013, will you be negative without this fee increase?
Mr. Chairman, we will not be negative in fiscal year 13.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And once again, just to refresh our memories, I know that we have some obligations in terms of contracts. Can you tell us how those contracts will be implicated without a fee increase?
Mr. Chairman, we have generally two kinds of contracts that are paid out of the Court Automation Fund. We are currently paying programmers who maintain the current legacy system. Those programmers speak the language of the programs that we are currently using that were written starting back in the 80s, and we do not have staff on board that can use that language to fix, to upgrade, to deal with any of the issues that come up on those programs. So we paid those programmers to the tune of about $860,000 a year. So as long as it takes us to get off of the legacy system and onto the new system, we will have to keep those programmers on contract. The other contract that we have is for the new computer system that we have started implementing now. It's in pilot stage. That contract was a little over $8 million when it started. We owe about $5.9 million still on that contract. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. Further questions? Any other questions from the committee? Senator Olson.
I didn't know if there was any. Is there anybody here representing the opponents to the bill? Thanks.
Mr. Chair, Dan Sifkin, Executive Director of the South Dakota Multi-Housing Association.
Thank you, sir. My question, if I remember right, your primary concerns is that when you do background checks for individuals, remind me again, are you guys with, are you HUD affiliated, or is most of your tenants just the John Q. Citizen?
We've got members that are just strictly HUD, some tax credit, some rural development. We've got members all the way from Sturgis to all across the state. That's why this makes it kind of really emotional for me, because we've got market rate properties that can, in fact, pass on an increase. Even though I feel that's unfair to ask the renter to pay for an upgrade of the court system. On the other hand, we've got properties that cannot raise their rents without the monitoring authority's permission. Those budgets have been set for this year, and they would not get an increase until January of next year.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Sarah Olson.
My question pertains directly to the market rate tenants that you have. I believe that right now the fee is $15. If when you're doing those background checks, are you doing it at cost, or is there a markup to your service to do those background checks on their behalf?
Mr. Chair, most of our members go through vendors. Some go to the courthouses. Unfortunately, in Minnehaha County, as an example, they will no longer take a landlord's request for a background check. It has to be faxed into one of the 10 counties that pulls the records. Takes up to 4 days, sometimes longer. We don't – crime-free, as I testified the other day, is close and dear to my heart. I push it to my members as much as I can. And the standard answer I get is, Dan, I used to do them. I don't anymore. It takes too long. It's not about the money. My prospect has already rented from somebody that doesn't do them. And that's why I really look at this as an opportunity to open a dialogue with the justice to come up with what a system that landlords need. Landlords don't need a certified court record. They need to know, is there a conviction, for what? What was the disposition and when? Because all our subsidized properties cannot allow a felon to live on the property.
So, Mr.
Sarah Olson.
Sorry, this will be the last one. I hope I can be more direct. For the market rate renters or potential tenants, is it common practice in your industry to charge a service fee or an upcharge on the background check for those individuals?
Mr. Chair, sorry, I misunderstood your question. Yes. Going rate in the state of South Dakota runs between $25 and $35. On rare occasions, I see a $45 fee, but I'd say the market, for the most part, Sioux Falls, Rapid City, those areas, you're in the $25 to $35 rate.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Further questions? Other questions from the committee? Thank you. Seeing none, we will open to committee discussion and or action. Senator Gray.
Mr. Chairman, at this time I would move HB 1058 to the Appropriations Committee.
Second. Motion to refer 1058 to Appropriations. Motion by Gray, seconded by Rave. Comments on that motion, Senator Gray.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion here on both sides of this, but this really, at this point, belongs in a different venue, I think the Appropriations Committee, where they can take a look at the budget, they can examine the fund, the revenues going into it, the expenses coming out of it, look at the general budget of the courts, and discuss and continue their discussion, frankly, from last year when they discussed taking funds out of this automation fund in the first place. So, with that, I hope you support the motion.
further comments on the motion to
Mr.
refer?
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Adelstein.
I would resist deferring this to appropriations. We have clearly heard that the fund does not go negative until 2013, which would be June of 2013. There's an intervening legislative year. I know that these fees are very burdensome to many social agencies who could not afford this increase. So I would rather that we act. I suppose I can make a substitute motion. Or is that? Can you make a substitute motion to a motion to defer?
Not at this point, Senator Adelstein.
Thank you. And I really resist.
And the only reason I would not allow it at this point is because of the preparatory remarks.
Thank you.
Further comments? Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first of all, it's clear to me that there's a problem. Secondly, it's clear to me that the legislature or the legislative process contributed to that problem. It's come to us, the solution to the problem has come to us in the form of a fee increase. And I just think we have to be very careful about that. It's easy for government when tax dollars are tight to go to fees to raise revenue. And frankly, I think that's a good place to go. I think a fee for a service is an appropriate way for government to collect money. But I think we also have to be careful that the fee is appropriate to and directed to the service. When we talk about a fee, we collect X dollars to provide a certain fee, and there ought to be a very close connection between the two. That's where I start to have a problem here, is because I'm concerned that the fee that we're proposing is excessive and not directed to the service that's being provided as a result. Therefore, I believe it's appropriate to refer this back to appropriations, which I think is perhaps maybe where the root of this all started, and see if they can sort it out and to see if there's some other appropriate solution, because we need one, another appropriate solution besides a fee increase on this particular service. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments, Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, here we are. I mean, we definitely can see that this will be the road that we're going to go down in terms of trying to replace these extreme cuts that happened last year. And I think this is something where we owe it to ourselves to really think about where we hope to proceed. And I just hope, as we examine this issue, I understand the logic sent into appropriations, and hopefully they'll be able to sort it out. But we also have to remember that UJS has been essentially boxed in. And so I think each of you have taken a chance to look at that and how we can offer some help to the UJS to work through their situation, because we know that computerized system is something that's understood that needs to be worked on and be the goal in the end. And so I think this is something that each of us, I know we don't go down this road lightly, but at the same time, I think we realize that this is probably only the beginning to fee increases that will come to continue to backfill the cuts that happened last year.
Further comments, Senator Cutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your patience in taking a lot of testimony. I know that most of us as committee members have heard from a lot of different folks back home about this bill. I think we find ourselves in an interesting position here in that even according to one of the opponents, some of the service that they are looking for that would help them can't be implemented because the system right now is caught between the antiquated system that the UJS is running off of back from the 1980s and the new system for which they have already entered into a contract that is for whose implementation has already begun. And what we're doing right now is putting them in the most expensive situation with the least amount of service to the public. We're requiring them to keep the antiquated system and all the service providers that are attached to that going because we can't implement the new system. At the same time, we're still under contract with the new system. So I do hate to see us send this to appropriations. I think it should be our job to just go ahead and fix this. We've heard all the testimony. But I think that we have to keep in mind that the service that's being provided isn't just simply the record as it's created and given to someone who requests it. The service has lying underneath it the whole technology that supports it, and that is, in my opinion, an appropriate place for the fee. So I'm less convinced that this fee increase isn't related, as some committee members may feel, but I think it is directly related to the cost of the system. And I hope that with the education that we as committee members have received about this issue, that we carry that on to the appropriators in their work on this matter.
Thank you. Further comments on the motion to refer? Any further comments? Well, I would just voice my opinion. You know, I believe that it was proper that we had a policy discussion here, although I don't think we have all the cards on the table as far as the implications and the conversation that took place last year in appropriations. So I will support the motion to refer this bill to appropriations where they have a better foundational understanding of where we started from. I will also say that I believe, based on the testimony, that there are legitimate reasons. I believe that we have the responsibility to fund these upgrades as per former commitments. I have reservations as far as the fee increases and whether that's a legitimate place to fund these increases. It's my hope and my urging to the appropriators that they look to other sources. I believe that user fees are an appropriate source of funding costs, because obviously if you're the one that's using the service, it's appropriate that you pay for the cost of those services. In this case, I believe there are instances where people are unfairly charged more money than they should be, given the fact that the primary beneficiary in some of these cases is a general public, not the person that's being required to pay the user fee. So I would urge the appropriators, and I will do so personally, that they look toward other funding sources as they consider this. So with that, the motion then is to refer House Bill 1058 to the Appropriations Committee. That does constitute final action from this committee, so as such, it will require a roll call vote. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Adelstein?
No.
Cutler?
Aye.
Frerichs?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 1058 is referred to Appropriations. We will go back to the top of our calendar now and take up House Joint Resolution 1002, an act to propose a constitutional amendment to repeal certain reimbursement restrictions for travel by legislators to and from a legislative session. House Joint Resolution 1002 is now open for public hearing. Proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. Senator Todd Schleckaway, District 11, which represents West Sioux Falls. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this legislation with you guys this morning. Everyone, we all know what it does. It's going to amend Article 3, Section 6 of our state constitution and repeal a 5-cent mile restriction for our first and last trips to pier. Obviously, to say that this is archaic would be a huge understatement. I just want to emphasize a few key points. I believe the time is now to do this. Number one, everybody knows in the state of South Dakota we have a very strong executive branch. We're a citizen legislature. These type of archaic provisions in our state constitution, no pun intended, but they nickel and dime our institution. And so that's the first point I want to make. I would plead with the committee not to minimize this, okay? Second point, one of the key themes of this session that all of us have been tasked with, regardless of what committee we've been on, is following through with the governor's red tape review. We're scrubbing obsolete, archaic, outdated statutes from our books. Okay? So I submit to you, what we're asking you to do today is the same thing. It's entirely appropriate to get this on the ballot, amend our Constitution. This is our recourse to get this off the books. It's the same thing we're doing as we work with the executive branch and the administration to get out archaic statutes. It's the same thing. Why wouldn't we follow this theme when it impacts us? Number three, let's talk about the ballot a little bit. I believe, you know, we're going to have probably candidates running in 105 candidates will be elected. We'll have 200 plus candidates of both parties crisscrossing the state, crisscrossing their districts this fall. That's a tremendous reach to educate voters. Everyone we come across is an opportunity to talk about why this needs to go. So think about that, the impact we can have as legislators to help educate voters on this. And one of your members of this committee came up with a great idea, which, should this move forward, I will personally help put together. That's my pledge to you folks. And that's involving assembling a team of former, well-respected legislators who are basically giants in this state when it comes to South Dakota politics of both parties, have them garner some media attention through press conferences, through other means of communication, to help educate people on why this should go. And again, in my 4 years, we've had one special session, and that was the session on redistricting. But keep in mind that every time we have a special session, we get 5 cents, folks, every single time. I talked to some from the southeast part of the state and the northwest part of the state who literally lost money during the special session. And so that is what I wanted to come here and discuss with you guys. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you about this. I appreciate your support. I'd love to let all 35 of the members get a say in this, because this impacts all of us. This isn't 9 members here we're talking about. This impacts everybody, and that's my message, is I would appreciate the opportunity to let all of our members of the Senate vote on this, and I'll stand by for any questions. I'd appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Schleckway. Further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jim Bolin, State Representative District Number 16. That is all of Union County and the southern portion of Lincoln County. I bring to you today House Joint Resolution 1002, a measure to repeal a section of the South Dakota Constitution that limits mileage reimbursement for the legislators to 5 cents a mile. And be assured, I will be brief in this presentation. I want to emphasize this measure has nothing to do with legislative salary. That will remain at $6,000 per year. It also has nothing to do with per diem payments we receive for living expenses while here in Pierre. That will remain at $110 per day. What this measure does is to repeal a section of our Constitution that is clearly an anachronism. I bring this measure to you out of a sense of reasonableness. Is it reasonable for anyone to be asked to drive a vehicle in their official capacity for 5 cents a mile in 2012? Is it reasonable to believe that we would include such a measure in the Constitution if we were creating it today? And if we did, would that limit be 5 cents a mile? If you believe it is an unreasonable limit, then I would encourage you to vote yes and advance it on to the Senate floor. This measure is just a very reasonable proposal, and its passage would give the people an opportunity to eliminate an unreasonable provision from our Constitution. Finally today, I would like to emphasize that 2012 is an excellent year in which to move this constitutional amendment forward. Every 12 years in our state, we have a general election in which we have only 3 statewide races for individual offices on the ballot, and no election for governor or senator. This last occurred in 2000, and it will now take place in 2012. We will have 4 statewide races this year for individual office holders, but that will occur only because of resignations. In short, this is the best year in which to deal with these constitutional issues. In some years, it might be a valid claim that measures such as this would be a cluttering up the ballot, but that claim cannot have validity in this unique election cycle. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, State Affairs Committee, Larry Lucas, State Representative, District 26A, which is Todd in Millette Counties. Back in 2007, I sponsored a similar resolution that was passed by the legislature and voted on in 2008 by the citizens of South Dakota. And what the page is passing out is the proponent and opponent positions on that resolution that went out in the Secretary of State's candidate or ballot information mailing. Now, normally, I would respect the wishes of the voters of the people, but I think this is an issue that needs to come back to them for the reasons that Senator Selakaway and Representative Boland have outlined. Furthermore, I had very little opportunity to do any ballot education back in 2008. I remember being at a couple of forums where the ballot questions were discussed. I was on the Rick Noby show once, but had very little opportunity to do any press conferences across the state. Secondly, the opponent to the constitutional amendment that I had in 2008 was then Senator Gene Abdallah, who had a much larger name recognition than I had. I would add that now as a representative, he did vote yes for this when this resolution went through the House, so that shows that he has gotten smarter coming from the Senate over to the House, and I know that he realizes he was wrong back in 2008. But that's really what it's about. It's about how do we educate the public on getting outdated and obsolete language out of our Constitution. A lot of times people just look at it and say, oh, we're going to vote on the Constitution. We shouldn't do that. Well, there are times that it's proper that we need to update the Constitution, bring it up to the 21st century. So for those reasons, Mr. Chair, and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee, I hope you will pass this to the Senate floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Seeing no further proponents, are there opponents? Any opponents? Seeing none, questions from the committee? I might bring Representative Boland back. My question to you, Representative Boland, Senator Selakaway talked about it some. One of the definitions of insanity are repeating the same thing over and over and expecting different results. We've been down this path before. The only thing that might change my mind on that is if we did something different. Senator Selakaway talked about the possibility of organizing an effort to educate the public. My question to you is, are you committed to joining that effort?
Mr. Chairman, yes, to the best of my ability and the time constraints that I would have, but yes, I would be committed to organizing and helping people, especially in the more populated areas of the state in southeastern South Dakota, and seeking to push this issue forward for an affirmative vote.
Further questions from the committee? Any other questions? Thank you. Seeing none, we'll open to comments and or action. Senator Cutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I appreciate the fact that the proponents have brought this forward because it gives us an opportunity to talk about strengthening the legislature as a branch of government. And maybe when gas wasn't as expensive as it is today, nobody felt the particular pain of 5 cents a mile. But certainly the legislature as a branch of government needs to be strengthened. And should we go forward with this measure, I think we do it not just for ourselves, but for those who would serve after us to make sure that serving in the legislature isn't seen, it's cost enough when we all, as a citizen legislature, leave our jobs, leave our families. There's certainly cost involved in that one of which all of us who serve are willing to give. But I think when this was on the ballot before, our Pages father and others served on the Constitutional Revision Commission that recommended several changes to our Constitution, and that might have been part of the problem in passing it, in that there were so many different things on the ballot. It took people a longer amount of time to read the ballot and get through the ballot measures. And, of course, whenever there's a question that people have about the ballot and the Constitution, they tend to vote no rather than yes. And so I see this as a positive thing in strengthening one small thing we can do to perhaps strengthen the legislative branch of government, and I urge your support.
Further comments and or action? Senator Rave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move do pass.
Motion Rave, do pass, second by Cutler. Comments on that do pass motion? Senator Rave.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just dissociate myself with comments of the previous senator and ask for your support. Thank you.
Further comments, Senator Gray.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to oppose this today. We're, 2012 this year. Hasn't been 4 years, and the people, and we're back at it again. People voted on this in 2008. 211,413 people said no. And it wasn't mixed up with any other amendments to the Constitution. This was the same amendment. Now, I happen to agree with the proponents that this is obsolete, no doubt about it. But if you want to fix compensation for this body, for legislators, we can simply do that with a statute. A statute that if we're all brave enough to get behind, we can pass this session or any session. What I'm not for is continuing to put the same thing on the ballot over and over again when 59%, just shy of 59% of the people said no. So with that, I'm going to not support this today.
Further comments? Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Three things. First of all, the people are best served when legislators fit between two parameters. And on one side, we have that they have to be compensated well enough that enough citizens of our state are willing to serve as legislators. On the other end, they can't be compensated so much that the people come here only for the money. Well, I would submit that we're bumping way, way on the bottom end of this scale. We've already gone through what the per diem and what the salary is. This is a small section of that, but again, I think it just tends toward the bottom end of the scale, and I just fear that there are people in our state that might hesitate and be unwilling to serve because they can't afford it. Secondly, I understand Senator Gray's remarks. We should be very careful about taking something back to the ballot when people have already fairly recently said no. On the other hand, when I go out in the community and I bring up this subject, I haven't had a single person be able to justify to me why they really felt that legislators should be paid 5 cents a mile. Not a single one. So that indicates to me that maybe it is okay to go back again. And finally, I would say that perhaps we should take a better opportunity this year to have an organized campaign. We are going to have the corporation amendment to the Constitution, which I think everyone here agrees is very important for the business climate in our state. That needs to be changed in the Constitution. There will be some organized efforts there, and I think if we go out to our people and explain what these amendments are, I think we have a high likelihood of being more successful. So I'm going to support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Seeing no further comments, the motion then is do pass HGR 1002. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Adelstein?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Frerichs?
Aye.
Gray?
No.
Johnston?
No.
Rave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
No.
Roden?
Aye. Motion carries.
We have six yeas and three nays.
Motion carries. HGR 1002 goes to the floor with a do pass recommendation. We move now to House Joint Resolution 1004, an act to propose a constitutional amendment regarding legislative term limits. HGR 1004 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Bolin, State Representative, District 16, all of Union County, Southern Lincoln County, to show my commitment to the pledge that I made to you that I would work hard to remove this archaic portion from the South Dakota Constitution, I'm going to ask that you defeat House Joint Resolution 1004, and I'm just going to take one item at a time. So I would ask, I'll save your time, and we'll ask that you defeat House Joint Resolution 1004. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, unless there are somebody that needs to make any other comments in the form of public testimony, I will close the public hearing and open for committee discussion and or action. Senator Olson.
I'd move HJR 1004 to the 41st day.
Sorry. Motion by Olson to defer to the 41st day, seconded by Rave. Comments on the motion? Seeing none, the motion then is to defer HJR 1004 to the 41st day. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Adelstein.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye. Motion carries. HGR 1004 is deferred to the 41st legislative day. And my thanks to Senator Bolin for your brevity, and I believe that was an appropriate thing to do.
If I may, Senator.
Yes. Come to the microphone.
Thank you, Senator. You referred to me as Senator. I'm not quite there yet. Okay. Thank you.
Well, you had made a gesture that I thought was meritorious and probably called you Senator as a result of that.
Mr. Chairman.
One second, Senator Adelstein. I wanted to explain to the young people, Senator Olson suggested that I make an explanation of a 41st day motion. We have 35 days in this session. Typically, the long sessions go 40 days. And so as a polite way of killing a bill rather than a tabling motion, which ends all debate, we have sometime in our past invented a 41st day motion. So we defer a bill to the 41st day, understanding that the longest session is 40 days. There's nobody around here to act on it in the 41st day, so it's a polite way of killing a bill. Okay? Was Senator Adelstein?
I was going to ask you to do what you just did.
Oh, very well. Great minds must think alike. Senator Olson, Senator Adelstein.
The river.
Yeah, Madison. I guess it's not even west of the Jim River. Is. We will take up now House Bill 1233, an act to provide for the public access to the records of former governors and lieutenant governors. House Bill 1233 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Tony Venhuizen from the Governor's Office. I'm here today to ask you to consider House Bill 1233, which is an act to provide for the public access to the records of former governors and lieutenant governors. I'll be pretty brief in my presentation and then, of course, be standing by for questions. Let me give you a little context as to why the governor is bringing this bill. This issue about former governor's records really gained clarity to us last summer when we had a couple requests for access to the papers of Governor Janklow and Governor Rounds, and then really came to the forefront last fall after Governor Janklow's announcement about his cancer. You may recall that at the press conference where Governor Janklow announced his health condition, he also talked about his plans to move his papers and records and so forth to the University of South Dakota. Much of that material was held at the State Archive here in Pierre, and it was Governor Janklow's wish that those records be transferred to Vermilion, to USD. So our office worked with Governor Janklow and Marshall Damgaard, who works for him, and with the archive to make that happen. I kind of spearheaded that for the office and met with Governor Janklow to understand what he wanted and saw some of the records that he has personally in addition to the state's records, and we drew up some agreements to make that happen. And I know the archive right now is working on collecting and preparing those records to be moved to Vermilion so that all of his records from his public life and his personal and political records are held in one place. So what we found as we were working through this is that we have pretty well-developed practices in our state for dealing with these records. In fact, Governor Janklow developed much of the practice that we use. But our statutes are really not, they don't contradict the current system, I don't think, but they don't really reflect it either. It is, it's just something that's not contemplated under the law. So the bill we are asking you to consider has four sections. The first section clarifies that the records of former governors and lieutenant governors are the property of the state. There's been some question in the past about whether those become personal property or remain a state property. This would clarify that. It's not really addressed in the law right now. Section 2 would simply state that all records of a governor or lieutenant governor are open to the public 10 years after the governor leaves office or upon his death, whichever is longer. The reason for this section is former governor's records fall under the open records law, which means that currently those categories that are closed under the open records law, remember there's a presumption of openness and then certain exceptions. Those records that fall under the exception would be closed indefinitely under the current law. For example, the governor's daily calendar of what appointments he had. Even 100 years from now, that would be closed under the open record law. This would say that those are eventually open for for historians to consider. In Governor Janklow's case, he left office on January 7, 2003. That would mean all of his records would be open January 7, 2013. He asked that his records be open early upon his death, and so that has now happened, and he would have that control. What Section 3 clarifies is our current statute does not make it clear if, for example, in Governor Janklow's case, if Governor Janklow controls access to his papers or if the sitting governor, Governor Dugard in this example, controls access. This would make it clear that it's the governor whose records are in question who controls it, or he can designate someone. For example, Governor Janklow, had he not chosen to open it, could have designated his son or Marshall Damgaard or someone to do it. And then Section 4 simply gives us the authority, makes it clear that we have the authority to enter into agreements with third parties to administer these records. For example, again, the agreement we have to send Governor Janklow's records to USD. What we found is we have 30 former governors in South Dakota, and over half of them, I think 16 or 17 of them, already have their records at the University of South Dakota. So this is a widely accepted practice. We just want to make it very clear. So I think that this is a good bill for public access in the long term and for preserving these records for history, for making sure there's a system that everyone understands and that's clear in our statute. So I'd ask you to support this bill, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, David Bordewijk, registered lobbyist, South Dakota Newspaper Association. We appreciate and applaud the governor's office for bringing this legislation forward. I think it's with great foresight. We have lots of students in the room today, and I think this kind of legislation will prove very valuable down the road for educators, researchers, archivists, to give direction as for being able to access some of these records in the future to provide that perspective, that history of state government, of governors, past governors, and I think that's a great thing. Also, I give great foresight for the legislature for passing the comprehensive open records legislation a few years ago, which provides the framework for how we deal with these records and the exemptions for confidentiality. So with that, we appreciate it and ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents? Any opponents to 1233? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Senator Adelstein?
One quick question for Mr. Van Huysen.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Van Huysen, what if a governor who is still living wants his records made available to the public in a shorter time than the 10 years?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that would be allowed under this bill. And in fact, that's what Governor Janklow did. He asked that his papers be opened upon his death, which would be just almost exactly a year earlier than the 10 years. And any other governor could do that either in general or on a case-by-case basis if they so chose.
I understand that because the bill covers death, but what if a governor wrote a letter saying, I'd like my records open next month and I've just left office?
That, Mr. Chairman, yeah, that would be allowed to.
I didn't see that. Thank you.
You bet.
Mr. Van Huysen, can you help me understand, other than schedule that you mentioned, what else might be included in those closed records?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Let me tell you first things that are open and then the things that are closed. Some things that would be open right away would be governor's proclamations, the text of speeches that are delivered in public, any final reports of governor's task forces that are released, photographs, letters that are sent out by the governor, really anything that's available to the public, press releases, those things are open at the time, so they would be open to history as well. Some things that would not be open would include correspondence received by the office, and that's important if you think about the governor's office gets a lot of correspondence dealing with social services issues and corrections and things that you wouldn't want to have opened in the short term. Those would be closed. Internal memos. If I write a memo to the governor offering him advice on whether to support or veto a bill, for example, that's a private memo, that would be private in the short term. The governor's calendar I mentioned would be an example. And also any other correspondence, to the degree that emails are kept in the long term, those would be closed as well. So those would be the type of things that I think there are good reasons that in the short term they're closed under our law. But if you think about 50 years from now, they might be enlightening to historians who are writing about the period.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll open to discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Gray.
I'd move due pass on House Bill 1233.
Second.
Motion do pass by Gray, seconded by Cutler. Comments on the motion, Senator Gray?
Not much for comments, Mr. Chairman. It seems like a common sense approach to records of former governors and lieutenant governors.
Thank you, Senator Gray. Further comments? Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is due pass, 1233. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Adelstein?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Frerichs?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Brave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 1233 goes to the floor. Do pass.
I'd move consent.
Motion consent by Olson, seconded by Johnson. Comments on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. House Bill 1233 goes to the floor. Do pass on consent. Are there any announcements? Motion to adjourn by Cutler, seconded by Olson. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Meeting is adjourned.